Elliot, great to have you. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're swell. I was worried we wouldn't chat with you for ages.
Yeah, I'm sure you were really worried.
Very worried. You need your time, and it's been stolen from you with this pause and pandemic. And I thought, you know, there's a hardworking insider that could use a few months away. But then they go ahead and give us 6 years of labor peace and announce key dates for the next, I guess, 6 months. I had to ask, and thank you for obliging and joining us today.
You know what, Ryan? This is the way I look at it. After these last 4 months, what is it today? Like, I was on in Toronto with Eric Smith this week. He's like joking that I couldn't remember what day it is. He's like calling it like March 97th or something like that.
Yeah.
So like nobody's going to be complaining about working right now. I can tell you that much.
What was the biggest takeaway for you on the key dates released? Any surprises? I know a lot of us had thought, okay, they've allowed themselves the wiggle room to start Jan 1. It felt like it almost had been floated so that it wouldn't surprise anyone, and then all of a sudden, boom, that was up a month. Or was it some of the other stuff, like the draft or free agency?
Well, I just, you know what, like someone had told me that when they, a couple weeks ago, that it might have even been a month ago, that they'd agreed on a 42-day off season. And I didn't really think about it too much, Ryan, but then when you look at it, man, it just looks tight, doesn't it?
Sure,
you know,
does.
You see the Stanley Cup final ends October 2nd, and the draft could be, what, 4 days later? And then you realize how quickly free agency comes. And then, now, they made sure to say that the draft was tentative and the camps next year are tentative because we just don't know where everything's going to be. I know they'd like to start next year with the possibility of some fans in the building. I don't know if a vaccine is going to be possible by the end of 2020, it probably depends on who you listen to, but can you social distance your fans? Are people going to be able to afford tickets? So I do think the start of next year could be dependent on those kinds of decisions. But to me, it's just, you know, how quick the turnaround is. It's going to be quick for everybody. And, you know, hearing 42 days and then seeing what 42 days looks like on paper, you know, it's an ambitious schedule, and then we're assuming that everything can happen the way they hope it can happen, which, you know, right now is a big assumption.
Yeah, no, it's really hard to imagine 2 weeks from now, never mind what December looks like. That has been the fool's errand, is trying to predict the future in these 100 days of March or wherever we're at. Two things I want to touch on. Free agency, I don't know that there'll ever be an off season as unusual as this one, with revenues incredibly uncertain and with a flat cap for what looks like at least the short term, for probably the first time in the history of the league having a cap. What approach do you think players and agents are going to take to this, knowing that there's potentially a windfall with the US TV deal on the horizon, and understanding how tight things are right now? How does that change what would happen to, say, the Brodies and Hamonics of the Calgary universe, but also the bigger names elsewhere around the league?
Well, you know, I think the one thing is, like, I talked to one GM this week, Ryan, who said that he's not, like, he doesn't think that the cap will go up at all in the CBA. Like, maybe a million here and there, but that's about it. And he said he's not the only one who's thinking that. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, we kind of have to remember here is that, And I think it kind of gets lost. The players get the cap on escrow, but they owe, like, if the money, if the revenue loss this year is $1.2 billion, which is kind of what they're targeting if they play, then the players owe $600 million of that. So independently of the escrow money they pay back from year to year, they've got to repay that $600 million. Now, by foregoing their last check, that saws about $150 million off the bill. And if we get through and play this year, it probably saves them another $150 to $2 million. So then we're in $150 to $200 million. So then we're probably in the $250 to $300 million range. So that money has to be paid off. And, you know, I think that that's why, as one GM explained to me, he said that unless the TV deal is huge, and there's some questions about what TV deals are going to look like out of this. And maybe they explore new revenue streams. We'll see. But it's going to be tight. You know, Ryan, teams are expecting it to be really tight. And there's no question to me that the most interesting things are going to be players who are free agents. You know, what do they do now? You know, there's three big ones this year, and I think everybody's very curious to see what the market's going to look like for Petrangelo, Hall, and Krug. Those are guys who would have hit jackpots. Now, what's it going to be? They'll still probably do well, but what does that mean exactly? And then there's the RFAs. Like, I think the team everybody looks at is just to the west of you in Vancouver. You know, like, in Vancouver, I was on radio this week, and, you know, like, they're talking how Pettersson and Hughes might take short-term deals so the cap goes up. I'm not so convinced about that. I think all the agents are kind of still digesting how this all is going to work. But what if they say, look, like, this is the time when you've got to hit when it's big. And, you know, the fact that the cap is flat, it's not my problem. It's your problem. I'm still one of your best players. So I think we're all trying to figure this out. But I think what could really happen, Ryan, is, and what usually happens in all this, is the middle class could end up getting really squeezed.
Yeah, I look at the Vancouver situation. It's fascinating. You've got Toffoli, Markstrom, Tanev, and Laveau as UFAs. You have Vertanen, Gaudette, and Stetcher as RFAs. And on the horizon, probably something in the neighborhood of what would have looked like $20 million for Pettersson and Hughes to split. That is, that's a serious minefield to waltz through.
Well, and who's to say it won't be? Still. Like, I don't know. I think we're still learning about all this. And, you know, but the one thing is that, you know, they can sign those guys pretty quickly. Like, that's one of the things that this deal allows you, is that we're getting to the point pretty quickly after this gets ratified where you can lock up guys like Hughes and Pettersson. So it'll be interesting to see. Like, you know, I always remember Doug McLean working with us, and after the lockout in 04-05, he signed Rick Nash to that big second deal, and people went crazy. And they said, that's not the way that this is supposed to work. It's not the contract you're supposed to give. And, you know, Doug being Doug was like, you know, F you, this is my star. And, yeah. You know, I think that that's kind of the way that I always look at it. Like, the star players, and, you know, who knows? Like, I don't want to speak for them. Maybe they will give the Canucks a bit of a break. I don't know. But all I know now is that the players are making more money on their second deals than ever. The star players are making huge money on their second deals. And if I'm going to cause any problems as a manager, it's probably not going to be with my star players.
Elliot Friedman joining us, his usual Friday slot here at 7:45 on Boomer in the Morning, Ryan Pinder and Will Nault. Will.
Elliot. By the way, Will, hang on one second. We should change the title of this show to Occasionally Boomer in the Morning.
You have it. You got to use it. I don't know. I mean, if I'm Boomer, I'm not mailing it back to
Boomer
Kirsch
in the morning. At his convenience, Boomer in the morning.
That's right.
To be fair, we've been playing outclips, outtakes from him where he's been, you know, caught cursing and things like that. So his presence is still felt.
Oh, that's good.
Go ahead, sure. Will. Sorry.
No, all good. Elliot, I don't know how much it's been talked about, but it almost seems like it's lost in the shuffle a little bit. How does the new CBA, kind of everything that's happened here, and even the shifting timelines, what's the impact for the Seattle NHL franchise at this juncture?
Well, I think Seattle has a chance to be a big winner in this, Will. And you know, like, obviously when Vegas came in, you know, there were a lot of teams that did things that they said, if I could do it over again, I wouldn't do that. And I think they said that there's no way we're going to do with Seattle the mistakes we made with Vegas. Well, I'll tell you this right now. I really believe that the tightness of the cap makes Seattle a big winner here. And, you know, they're going to have a lot of, they're going to be a lot of teams that are going to say, oh boy, you know, Seattle can do us a favor with their cap situation. And so I think Seattle potentially is a big winner. You know, I'm curious to see, you know, what they're going to do. How much is their hiring timeline going to be affected? You know, we'll see about that. But I think they have a chance to be a real big winner because all of a sudden, I think some teams that were hoping some room was going to be there, all of a sudden, it's not going to be there.
Safe to say their timeline for entering the league hasn't changed, though?
No, it has not. As far as I know, it has not.
Okay, well, that's good news, certainly, for them. From what you've been able to gather, if you can, maybe for some of our listeners, pull back the curtain. What exactly will these hubs look like in terms of how locked down are teams going to be once they enter these hotels, or is that kind of unknown at this point?
No, it's going to be – like, if you're really interested, all this stuff is public now. I believe the league and the players have both put it on their websites, the Stage 3 and Stage 4 protocols. You can read them, and it's going to be tight. Like, you know, honestly, Will, like, everybody you talk to, they believe in their bubbles, okay? They believe once the players get into the bubble, they're going to be there, and they're not going to get out, and it's going to be tough to get out. Like, that is the rule. If you leave without permission, the player can be thrown out of the event, and the team can be fined and lose a draft pick. Like, they're serious about this. And so... it's going to be they're going to make it very tough to you can't leave without permission, basically. And it's going to be locked down. Like, people are not going to be able to get in. Even the media who are going to go to this event, they're not going to be able to mingle with the players. So it's going to be tight. And, you know, Will, like, I think the big fear is the next 2 weeks. You know, look, there's two teams in Florida. There's a team in Texas. There's a team in Arizona. You know, if you have any public awareness, you know what's going on in those states right now. And I just think that that's the big concern. If you take a look at what happened in MLS, two teams, Dallas and Nashville, they already got kicked out. And I think that's the issue, is the next 2 weeks, can they keep it under control? Because they definitely feel that if they get to the bubble, they're going to be okay.
Does the NHL have something similar in place, like the MLS? You just mentioned those two teams getting kicked out. And again, yes, I'm with you. I think the struggle is getting to the bubble. Is there room here for the NHL to boot a team or two? Because it seems pretty structured on 24 teams.
Well, I think that, you know, if you read the protocols, there's nothing definitive as to what the end means, right?
Okay.
Like, what could trigger the end? There's nothing there. And I think they want it that way. I think they want to play it by ear. I think they want to see how things happen. If I was a league right now, and I don't know if I'd want to put anything specific down on paper that the public would know that I don't know. As someone who was almost a lawyer, I understand why they did it that way. I believe, Will, that leagues are watching everything right now. And I would bet that if they had one team that showed up like that, they would say, okay, that team's out and the other team gets a bye or something, or we adjust. But that's kind of the way I look at it. And I just believe if one league does something, they're all looking at the same kind of thing.
Is there a tougher place to be in right now than if you're a player that had an expiring deal on the seven teams that aren't in the 24-team return to play?
I don't know. I mean, like I talked about earlier with Ryan, I think for all free agents, it's going to be weird. Okay. You know, the one thing that they've allowed you to do is that, and I think this is something that could help a player like that, is you're allowed to go play overseas now, right? Like, you can sign, if you're on one of the seven teams that isn't playing, you can sign a contract to play overseas for next year and still come back. The only situation where you can't do that is if you opt out from playing and you sign a contract overseas, you can't come back. But even so now, let's say you were playing for Ottawa, you're a free agent, you find a league that's starting up early next year, you can play, you maybe get a month in, and then somebody looks at you, you can take advantage of that. Even if your team gets knocked out, you know, say you play in the play-in rounds and you get knocked out, you can sign overseas and then come back next year. So there's options for players to do stuff like this. So it's dicey for everyone, but at least they've come up with something.
Yeah, it's cool. Good luck finding a league that's going to start on time, but it is.
Well, you know, KHL.
Yeah,
we'll see.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, you know, I saw today that Todd Lushko, who coaches in Germany, he tweeted that they're going to wait 2 months, but Mm-hmm. Let's see when the KHL and maybe the some of the other leagues start up.
Last one for me, Elliot. I don't know if we really – I don't think we were waiting for him to come back as an NHL head coach, but your reaction to Lindy Ruff getting the job in New Jersey?
You know, I don't get some of the reaction. I really don't. You know, I've dealt a lot with Lindy Ruff over the years. Obviously, I live in Toronto. He coached in Buffalo for a long time. I saw a guy who – and I didn't see him as much in Dallas, but – I saw a guy who in Buffalo coached a lot of different teams. I saw him coach a team that had maybe the greatest goalie of all time, and he built around him. I saw a team that came out of the lockout in 05-06 in the new NHL and immediately embraced the style. I saw older players thrive under him. I saw younger players thrive under him. You know, Daniel Briere turned his career around in Buffalo, for example. You know, I remember Adam Mayer telling me a story once about how Lindy Ruff, you know, it was later in his time in Buffalo, and I asked him, you know, how did Lindy Ruff change? And he told me a story about they had a two-game road trip to go to Florida, and the veteran said to Lindy, can we go a day earlier? And he said, you guys want a day to golf or do whatever down there, right? And they go, yup. And he goes, okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll give it to you this time. But if you don't give me two wins, we're never doing it again. And so he did it, and they won twice. And Adam Mayer said a younger Lindy Ruff never would have done that. And, you know, I just think that, you know, look, if you want to make the argument about recycled coaches and things like that, fine. You know, I'm not going to argue that with anyone. But sometimes I don't necessarily think that recycled means bad. Like, right. You know, Jacques Lemaire and Lindy Ruff are tight. I would be curious to know if anyone from New Jersey asked Lemaire about this. I do a radio hit in Buffalo. Andrew Peters is the host. He said that Ruff was one of the best X's and O's coaches he ever had. Like, I saw a guy in Buffalo who coached for 16 years with lots of different nuclei and lots of different players and a lot of players younger and older that thrived under him. You know, maybe this will work, maybe it doesn't, but I don't think it's a bad hire. Like, I think Lindy Ruff's a good coach, and I think a lot of people are making assumptions that aren't completely fair. I think they're obvious assumptions, for lack of a better term.
Well, and I'll say this. I was a little bit, eyebrows raised at Dave Tippett's return, but my goodness, the results have been undeniable, and he's given them structure. They've looked like a different group with almost the exact same personnel, so... I sort of feel the same way you are.
You know who I would like to see get a shot sometime, though? Like, you want to talk about younger guys? Like, there's, like, the guy I really want to see, the younger guy, is Rocky Thompson.
Yeah.
Like, that's a guy I'd like to see. And I think at some point in time, he will get his shot. But, like, you know, I'm all for fresh ideas. I'm all for trying different things. I have no problem with that. But, I don't know. You know, and maybe I'll be proven wrong. It's happened once or twice before. But I don't think, I just think that a lot of the criticisms of Ruff just are, he's coached already twice before. He's an older guy. And it's, I don't know. I always felt like I saw him a lot, 16 years up close in the business in Buffalo. And I saw a guy who coached a lot of different teams, a lot of different ways with a lot of different players. And I don't know. I just think a lot of the criticism here is a little over the top.
Okay, last one. Thanks for your time. You've been very kind. I'll steal one more. Will we have a buyout window? Who wants buyouts? Why would owners be willingly cashing over more money up front now?
No compliance buyouts. There's no compliance buyouts. They're not there. Now, there's regular buyouts, so there are buyout windows.
Right.
But there's no compliance. There's no compliance buyout. That's not there. And the one thing that's interesting about that, like, the players gave up their last check this year, but if you get bought out, you get it back.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Okay. And we have a Margarita Caesar Showdown in our cocktail bracket today.
If you really?
Pour one of those at the Foghorn today, or the steam whistle, whatever we call it. The last you're done for the day. Which one are you pouring?
Well, I'm a huge, like, I like both those drinks. Like, I don't think you can go wrong. But if they're both made well by people who are experts, I'm taking a good spicy Caesar. Like, I love a good spicy Caesar. It would be very hard for me to take almost any drink over a well-made spicy Caesar.
You're good.
I claim to have a pretty good season in my repertoire, Elliot. So if really? We ever sit down for a
well,
drink,
well,
I'll make you one.
If I ever come out there again, if people from Ontario are ever allowed into Alberta again, then I'll come out there and you'll make me one. Sounds maybe good. More than one.
How's that beard coming?
Oh, I look fantastic.
Good use of the word nuclei today, Elliot.
Thank you. I said nucleuses the other day, and people were tweeting at me like, are you an idiot? Uh-oh. There's no such word as nucleuses.
We'll see you at the stadium for the tournament.
All right, guys. Bye, have Elliot. A great weekend.